हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 20. Balaram smiled. Krishna is not interested in playing with me, Sesha Naga. Rather, he gets enjoyment from playing with a common material snake. Remembering Krishna's pastimes as an ordinary mortal, Balaram smiled. He did not speak a word, as this covering of knowledge did not seem proper, and the situation was beyond tolerance.
We are on page 22.
Yeah, exactly. We're on page 22. Oh. Okay, so we're on page 22.
Bishop Deva Goswami continued on the top.
On the top one, okay.
Where were you?
Yeah. Okay. So page 22. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued. Although someone else said, no, we're actually on 24. We could get through quite a few pages that way. Prabhu goes, actually, I think we're on page, what do you call it? Page 80. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, although the elder gopis were feeling just as much distress as she and were pouring forth a flood of sorrowful tears, they had to forcibly hold back Krishna's mother, whose consciousness was totally absorbed in her son. Standing like corpses with their eyes fixed upon his face, these gopis each took turns recounting the pastimes of the darling of Braja. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, but alas, how did she, his mother, react? In reply to this, it is described in this verse, the special condition of all of them, revealing only a little because of Sukadeva's own burden of sorrow. The Apatya is him because of whom the family does not fall into distress, or in other words, the son who is the object of the greatest affection. Therefore, casting her glance at him, she was most excessively tormented on account of him. Even though equally pained as her, the other elder gopis held on to her firmly and constantly, because otherwise she would have suddenly, by force, entered within the lake. They spoke Krishna's pastimes in order to console his mother. The detail of their words spoken in sorrow are given in Sri Vishnu Purana, 7:5-23-31. It is better that all of us, together with Mother Yashoda, enter into this poisonous, mighty lake of King of the Serpents rather than return to Vrindavan, which is no longer appropriate for us. After all, what is the use of the day without sun, of the night without moon, of the cow without her bull, or Vrindavan without Krishna? Deprived of Krishna, we shall not return to Gokula. This forest is no longer fit to be resided in, just like a lake deprived of its water. So this taste that they're tasting in their absorption in Krishna then is so intense that then Balaram felt that it's not the time to reveal about Krishna's position, right? Because it'll just be a covering, right? This is the natural mood of the Brajavasis. So to bring in knowledge would just be a covering, right? In Dwarka, it's not a covering. It's just one of the two tastes, that in sweetness and that in majesty. But in Braj, it's just sweetness. So this would actually be a covering of their natural mood. Okay. So then here, then they're thinking that without Krishna, then what's the whole point of life? Okay. So then, like the gopis, the young gopis, they felt that the whole universe was vacant. Then the elder gopis then also think in the same way. Right? But it'll have a different flavor. They're connecting all these things together. While for the young gopis, it's just felt like that. Okay. Yes. Yes.
What does it mean? It was different in a sense. What did they connect?
The parents are connecting. You know, so many varieties of there. You know, the day without the sun, night without the moon, like this. You know, so they're able to maintain that poetic aspect. While with the gopis, it's just Krishna's. If it's Krishna's not there, it's just empty. It's slightly different flavor. That's all. Does that make sense? So that, you know, because there is some difference in the perception of the rasas.
And can we say that Balaram, he didn't say anything because it wouldn't also have any effect on them?
That's another thing, but it'll just ruin the mood because they're so absorbed in Krishna. So naturally, then that ecstatic emotion wouldn't be enhanced with this knowledge. All you see is that they are functioning in their absorption in Krishna. Well, let's say with the universal form or some other things, they don't know how to function. So then by mentioning these things, then they, you know, are able to find a position from which they can function. So it's only useful in that they don't know how to relate. So yes, no, he may be a demigod. He may be, Gargamuni said he's like Narayan, you know, so in this way, then they can just, oh, okay, and then get back to their relationship. But in here, the relationship's being very fully manifest, so there'll be no advantage to bringing in the knowledge. Is that? Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Balaram then saw that Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men, who had dedicated their very lives to Krishna, were beginning to enter the serpent's lake. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Balaram fully knew Krishna's actual power, and therefore he restrained them. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, Nanda and all the other cowherd men who had dedicated everything, including their lives, to Krishna, were ready to enter the waters of the Jamuna. But Lord Balaram checked them because he was in perfect knowledge that there was no danger. Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, but it may be questioned, how was he able to check all of them? That is replied by the word Bhagavan, meaning endowed with all potencies. Some of them he checked by verbal argument, some by physical force, and some, according to Sri Vishnu Purana, by glancing at them face to face with his charming smile, like it mentioned before. Like because Balaram was smiling, then they felt that there's no danger. So some were checked by that. Right? So that had worked before for everyone before they left for the Jamuna. Right? But once they got there, then it only worked for some of them. So some he had to talk to, some he had to physically deal with. Right? So in other words, depending upon it, by body, by mind, by words, different devotees, then they were in that way held back. Or in other words, by showing them that the personality of Godhead was indeed all right. In this way, by giving pleasure to all, he is Rama. But it may be objected, how is it that he, Rama, was at ease? The reply is that his nature was that he knew the power, Anubhava Prabhava, of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original form of the Supreme Absolute Truth. And furthermore, it is to be understood that all of them, overwhelmed by the burden of affection, became extremely distressed on account of directly seeing Krishna, and especially because of not being allowed to enter the lake, by which rising of sorrow, they became bewildered and fell down upon the earth, unconscious. So the cowherd boys were unconscious, you know, had fallen before. Then, you know, they're up, so now they're falling unconscious. So by this, the ecstasy gets to such a point that they fall unconscious, then it checks them going into the water. Mm-hmm. Right. Shri Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The Lord remained for some time within the coils of the serpent, imitating the behavior of an ordinary mortal. But when he understood that the women, children, and other residents of his village of Gokula were in acute distress because of the love for him, their only shelter and goal in life, he immediately rose up from the bonds of the Kaliya serpents." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "For 2 hours Krishna remained like an ordinary child gripped in the coils of Kaliya. But when he saw that all the inhabitants of Gokula, including his mother and father, the gopis, the boys and the cows, were just on the point of death, and that they had no shelter for salvation from imminent death, Krishna immediately freed himself." Right, so, because, how do you say? I think death is one of the sattvika bhavas, right? So to keep them from going into that, then he freed himself. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura writes, "Krishna said, 'You have shown enough of your strength to me. Now I will show you a little prowess of my own.'" Right? In other words, he had shown him his strength. Now he'll just show a little bit. "Though I am just a cowherd boy," saying that, he broke free from the snake, Uranga, and stood up. Udatishtat. Verses 24-30. Shri Krishna's masterful dance. Shri Sukadeva Goswami continued, "His coils tormented by the expanding body of the Lord, Krishna released him. In great anger, the serpent then raised his hoods high and stood still, breathing heavily. His nostrils appeared like vessels for cooking poison, and the staring eyes in his face like firebrands. Thus the serpent looked at the Lord." Right, because of all the poison, then they become very, I mean, because of their envious, then they have all this poison, and that makes them then even more disturbing. Does that make sense? So in other words, the envy's there first, then the poison comes. Right? Because snakes are always envious. And then as they get older, they get more and more poison. So, yeah. "Again and again, Kaliya licked his lips with his bifurcated tongues as he stared at Krishna with a glance full of terrible poisonous fire. But Krishna playfully circled around him, just as Garuda would play with a snake. In response, Kaliya also moved about, looking for an opportunity to bite the Lord. Having severely depleted the serpent's strength with his relentless circling, Shri Krishna, the origin of everything, pushed down Kaliya's raised shoulders and mounted his broad serpentine heads. Thus, Lord Shri Krishna, the original master of all fine arts, began to dance, his lotus feet deeply reddened by the touch of the numerous jewels upon the serpent's heads." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura elaborates, "Raising himself upon Kaliya's head, he began to dance. Sri Harivamsa confirms this. He danced with his lotus feet, which were reddened because of the hard touch of the jewels on Kaliya's head. The dancer sometimes dances on various objects, such as dishes, to show his expertise. Krishna danced on the moving heads of Kaliya for this reason, and also to show that he was the original guru of all arts. It should be understood, however, that he especially wanted to show the young women of Braja who were attached to him his skill in dancing." Right. So he's purifying Kaliya and all that, and he's then establishing all these aspects of him being the Supreme Lord, and how he's the origin of the arts, how he's expert in the arts. Right? Because to be able to dance on something, right, is more difficult than dancing on the floor. But for him, he was actually just doing it because how much does it take to chastise Kaliya? So for him, the main thing was simply showing the gopis how nicely he could dance. Right? Because then in that way, then they would be, their anxiety would be reduced. Shri Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Seeing the Lord dancing, his servants in the heavenly planets, the Gandharvas, Siddhas, Sages, Charanas, and wives of the demigods immediately arrived there. With great pleasure, they began accompanying the Lord's dancing by playing drums such as mridangas, panavas, and anakas. They also made offerings of songs, flowers, and prayers. My dear king, Kaliya had 101 prominent heads, and when one of them would not bow down, Lord Sri Krishna, who inflicts punishment on cruel wrongdoers, would smash that stubborn head by striking it with his feet. Then as Kaliya entered his death throes, he began wheeling his heads around and vomiting ghastly blood from his mouths and nostrils. So this kind of dancing like this, we can see is that it's within the Lalit Kal. It's fine art. But this would be what is considered the Tandava, which is like the dance what Lord Shiva does for at the time of destruction. So it will have a bit more, so like that, then, because Shiva pushes down all the heads of the rulers of all the planets and that with his dance. So you also even see pictures of it where he's on Kaliya, but he has one foot down and the other foot is up, but it's not close, it's like bent, you know, kind of at knee level, and he has one hand holding Kaliya's tail. So that's the pose for the Tandava. Does that make sense? So they should understand so sometimes they make pictures of Krishna dancing with the gopis in that form. Generally you wouldn't use that form. But you know, it's not known, so it's just this. So then it would be very, very difficult for the snake.
All right. Then the pose of Nataraj is of Tandav.
In the?
Shivaji is also known as Nataraj.
Nataraj, yes.
So that pose is also Tandav pose.
Yes, that's the Tandav pose. It's the same pose. Mm-hmm. Because the point is, where does it come from? It comes from Krishna. Mm-hmm. And Shiva likes to do things that Krishna does. Like, because Krishna likes Baal, that's why then you offer Baal leaves to Lord Shiva.
Yeah.
You understand? It's not that Lord Shiva likes them separate. It's because Krishna likes Baal. Therefore, then he likes that it's not. The serpent thus experienced extreme pain and misery. Exuding poisonous waste from his eyes, Kali would occasionally dare to raise up one of his heads, which would breathe heavily with anger. Then the Lord would dance on it and subdue it, forcing it to bow down with his foot. The demigods took each of these exhibitions as an opportunity to worship him, the primeval personality of Godhead, with showers of flowers. So I guess this was the theme for Boy George's song. Srila yeah. Sanatan Goswami writes, "By the touch of the Lord's lotus feet, Kali is attaining special great fortune, and therefore the Lord's inducing him to raise up his hoods. Kaliya losing his vitality and so on is the Lord's exacting punishment upon the wicked in such places as Kaliya's, on such places as Kaliya's poisoned mouths, simply for the sake of dispelling his naturally perverted strength, pride, and so on." Right? Because he raises his head, it's perverted pride, so that has to be adjusted. Right? Then all this poison that's there due to his envy, all these things need to be adjusted. And thus, it is out of the ecstasy of pure love that Kaliya has become stunned, following which his vomiting of refuge was the abandonment of all his internal contamination. Right, so he gave up all his material consciousness, you know, like that, the attachment to anything material from the past. In his Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, "Kaliya represents brutal cruelty, maliciousness, pride, envy, and a snake-like crookedness. He particularly tries to pour his poison into the hearts of innocent Vaishnavas, which Krishna cannot tolerate. So then the Lord kills said tendencies." According to the Garga Samhita, in his last life, during the Manvantara of Swayambhuva Manu, at the beginning of the creation, he was a sage named Vedashira, who was cursed for not allowing the sage Ashvashira to meditate in his ashram. "You are angry for no reason. You hiss like a snake. Become a snake." Then Lord Vishnu appeared and told him that he would place his lotus feet on his head in that lifetime. Then Vedashira took birth with the first generation of great snakes to appear in the universe from Daksha's daughter, Kadru. Right, so then he's one of the, you know, that first generation of all the big, big snakes. You know, so Ananta is the first, but then he kind of left the association. Right, and so then who's his name?
Vasuki.
Vasuki, and then Takshika is the third. And then, you know, so many others, Dhritarashtra, and then Kaliya would have been one of those main, you know, snakes. In this regard, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes in the Harmonist, Kaliya is the type of cunning and is the type of cunning and malice. He is the embodiment of unrelenting cruelty. There is no place for Kaliya in the happy realm of Raja. Right? So in devotional service, it's not there. Someone does something wrong, it's corrected, one moves on. But then to keep after it, to go out of the way specifically, right, like that, then that's not important, especially when there's the element of cunning and malice. It means to correct something, that's there, but when these other elements are there, then it's not. You can see that there's something wrong. Even though it may be based on something religious, and so one can therefore feel that he's doing the right thing, but still, it being done with this cruelty and all that, you know, like an example is like the Inquisition, based on religious considerations, but the approach and the force by which it was just done with unrelenting cruelty. So we have to always be careful, is just because we take up a commitment to the religious process or to the spiritual process doesn't mean this anartha can't come up. Obviously, in materialists it does. You do something they don't like and they continue until you're destroyed. But we're talking here is that within religious process, within devotional processes, you can and have the same problem. But by surrendering to Krishna, then all these things will be removed. Yes.
And somebody may ask, there is a way that you can. It's not that you have to maintain the ill feelings, but there is a way to not to get something, but it's not satisfaction. But if you see the person has changed or whatever by following the process of Krishna consciousness, that one thing. But if it didn't, and it justifies whatever happened, then what?
That's there, but do we want to take part as the instrument for that?
No. Yeah. We want somebody else to do that.
Yes, but the point is we should leave that up to Krishna. So if we keep pushing that someone else does it, then why not do it yourself? It's much more obvious. You know, it's just one of the, what do you call it? One of the, it's actually one of the major legalistic principles. I think it's from the Magna Carta, so it goes back quite a ways. That if there is something that people are claiming that you did wrong, then the accusers actually have to come forth and make the accusation. So this modern thing of hiding behind what's it called? Anonymity?
Anonymity.
You know, where, oh no, but you're so nasty that you'll try to go after. That means that's maybe the mentality of people who say that. But the point is then it's like you're not even getting a fair trial. I mean, it's medieval pre-Magna Carta. But at the same time, as these individuals will generally claim that it's up-to-date, modern, democratic, all this kind of stuff. So it's just Kaliya. It's not anything glorious. We have to be very careful, because in Krishna consciousness, justice on this level is at the platform of pranamoy. We may claim it's religious, but then if it's religious, what is our duty? And so it's not our duty to create a crusade, therefore it's pranamoy, it's not monomoy. So it's not actually religious, it's sub-religious. So it's just out of false ego. Right? Means you protect yourself from these kinds of things. That's obvious. But to continue, that's not good. Is that something? So it's just something that we ourselves have to get over. It's not that we don't take care of things nicely. It's just that we don't have to make it into an issue, because the point is it's going to work out however it's going to be. Means if they're making some trouble, you stop them from making the trouble. But if the trouble is not being made, then what's the need to follow up?
Somebody sometimes people say that it might create again trouble because.
Yeah. So let us look at this. Okay, how long did those individuals who are saying that point? How long were they eating cows? Okay. So now, according to this, then it would actually be prudent to not actually let them come to our farms, because seeing the cows, what happens if they relapse back? And, you know, you understand, or they were not, they, you know, they were not into, you know, all kinds of illicit sexual activities. So, you know, shouldn't we separate them off? Or, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, but I'm just saying everybody. You know what I'm saying? So that's my whole point, is that we can say is maybe. But what is that maybe from? What's the evidence of it? What's the? We simply make it up too. It's an English saying is, give a dog a bad name and then hang them. So the point is unless you have evidence of this and that, you know, something ongoing, then you can, you, that may be something you consider. So managers will consider. But as far as the correction of it, the only correction is devotional service. It can't be corrected by anything else. Therefore, we see that contact with Krishna, Kali is purified. Without contact of Krishna, how will he be purified? So it's only through devotional service that any kind of impurity can be purified. If we foolishly think or falsely think that there is some mundane atonement that can actually correct the situation, then one is actually not having any spiritual understanding. Because even Manu on the material platform doesn't even recommend it. He says it's only for the satisfaction of people's ego and envy and material attachments that there is the process of prayaschitta. Because it doesn't work. The example is given of an elephant. Takes a bath, comes back on the land, and throws the dirt on themselves. Because unless you remove the desire for something, then it will come back. Does that make sense? So that would mean if it will come back in this person, it will come back in everyone. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that can remove the problem is devotional service.
We used to say in Manu that Brahmanas are not punished because they understand, I mean, not punished as severely as the rest.
It's different.
So in Brahminical society, that might be the case, but in the society of antijas, people should understand. Is that right?
The point is then, but one has to take the position, one has to be consistent. You can't take the liberal position of, oh, we're trying to be nice to everybody at the same time as there's demographics that we're totally against. And then say that, oh, we're, you know, we're Vaishnavs, so we're above the rules, and at the same time claim, well, we're antijas. You know, to say as though we're cultured and civilized and all that, and see, because we're Westerners and we can't follow all this simple, backward, Indian kind, you know what I'm saying? It's too, the platform is too inconsistent. That's the whole thing, is yes, the antijas, but how are you going to correct them from antijas to...
Only by devotional service.
So the only solution at all is devotional service. It's because people feel unless there's a material punishment, then there is no reformation. That's the only reason Manu mentions it, simply because it's a crowd pleaser. But we have to understand who is the crowd, the common people. So we can't claim, oh, we're Brahmins, or we're Vaishnavas, and then want the crowd-pleasing program. You know what I'm saying? We can't just choose whichever one we want whenever it suits us. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's very appealing.
It's very appealing, but then, you know, so therefore we take each of the eight positions of Varnashram when it's good for us, and then when even that doesn't work, then we take, yes, the antija, you know, like that. So therefore we have nine positions by which we can, you know...
Dance around.
But the problem is our dancing doesn't create purity, while Krishna's does. You're speaking... Bhaktisiddhanta says that. Okay. Deceit and cruelty are as poison to the artless, loving nature of the desert. Deceit and cruelty.
Deceit and cruelty.
Hmm?
Deceit and cruelty are as
yes, poison. No, but I'm just trying to make sense of the sense. Are as poison to the artless, loving nature of the denizens of Braja. What does that mean, artless, loving nature? Does that make sense to anybody?
Yes, something like very simple.
Oh, I see. Not that they are, okay. Yeah, lack of cunning, okay. It is quite... He's saying that here, the artless, loving nature.
Which is artless?
Means the nature, the artless... That means unless there's punctuation marks are not there. Prabhu is suggesting that meaning they're not art lovers, meaning because if anybody knows those who are in the artistic field and are into art, they generally have a real tendency for deceit and cruelty. Right? You know, I mean, there's the refined thing, but the point is they're simple. So they're not like the art lovers who are sophisticated or those who are artists and therefore then they have these kind of qualities. They're just very simple. And so all they do is just love Krishna. As he mentioned before, Kaliya has no place. There's no place for Kaliya in the happy realm of Braja. It is quite conceivable for the confidential friends of Krishna not to entertain any suspicion regarding the malicious intention of cruel and deceitful persons whose purpose is to poison them against Krishna. They may even unwittingly fall into the counsel of such evil persons. But Krishna is sure to rescue his own from the wiles of his enemies. So if one sincere surrender to Krishna, when these things come along, then Krishna will save the devotees. Nay, Krishna has also a plan for curing the evil propensity of Kaliya himself. The process, so he'll save the devotees, but he'll also cure Kaliya. That's the whole point, is that just saving people, that's good, but then more is being able to cure the actual problem. The process consists in making him feel the touches of his dancing feet. But Kaliya attempts to bear up against all curative chastisements. Instead of feeling the joy of supporting the feet of Krishna upon his nasty hoods, the monster finds it impossible to bear his good fortune without undergoing the pangs of actual death. Even the loyal wives of Kaliya, who desire the reformation of the monster, and whose good wishes for his well-being are the cause of Krishna's mercy towards him, are at last forced to intercede by a prayer for his banishment from the realm of Raja. But the pride of Kaliya had received a mortal check. The banishment of Kaliya from the lake of the Jamuna has a most important spiritual significance. Those who have a purpose to create trouble against the pure devotees of Krishna by infecting the devotees with their own malicious disposition meet with a certain degree of initial success in their nefarious undertaking. This emboldens them to make a direct attack upon Krishna himself when he appears on the scene of their depraved activities in order to restore the living faith of his own bona fide associates. Right, so that's why you have to be very careful on taking up these modern moods and everything. Because yukta vairagya means this yukta is connected to Krishna, vairagya is without attachment. But if we take up the moods of the modern way of doing things, that means it's neither yukta nor vairagya. Because otherwise, why would we take it up? Why would we accept the mood unless it's something that we value? Because the mood of the materialists is materialism. So taking up their mood means it's a material activity. It's not favorable to Krishna. Right? And because the mood is materialistic, the goal therefore becomes materialistic, means that it's not vairagya either. Mm-hmm. You understand? So the mood has to maintain within the devotional process. So when we say this changes, then it takes on that nature where it tries to poison individuals against the actual position of Krishna and his mission. And therefore, then people try to adjust it according to modern standards so that their material needs can be met. So this is that kind, another form of that kind of poison. Yes.
Can we say that this mood is prominent, more or less, nowadays, because time goes from when Srila Prabhupada was preaching himself and then it becomes watered down a little bit?
You can, yes, for those who don't mind taking part in that way. It's just like in the story of Puranjana, when then Puranjana becomes Queen Vidarbhi. And then at the time when her husband, Malayadvaj, when they go to the forest as vanaprastas, and then after some time, then he leaves his body. So then in the purport there, then Prabhupada goes back and forth between describing the relationship between the wife and the husband, between the student and the teacher, you know, between the disciple and the spiritual master. And so then he mentions that after the passing of the acharya, then there may be some bewilderment. But those who are sincere then stick to the instructions given by the acharya and don't try to change it because they think times have changed. Because the material world is the material world. It's the same old chewing the chew, just being that we have this hope of the Navayovan, for the Navayovana nature of the material world, when it's not, it is literally chewing the chewed. That we then think that there is some way that we can actually make a perfect material world, when actually it's not possible. Perfect means this connection to Krishna. So then, for those who have that, yes, the farther it goes away from Prabhupada's disappearance, then the more they can easily become, as mentioned here, emboldened, because then they get some success. Innocent devotees don't know, so then they can propagate modern kind of theories. And it sounds nice because it's presented logically, and most people are more simple and don't actually think that deeply, you know. But this deceit and these kind of things, we say, well, cruelty, but they're very nice, but it mentions that the Atmahata is actually the worst. The destruction of the soul, or the consciousness of the soul, is actually the greatest violence. Right? So in that way, then, the impersonalists are the worst, because they don't see things connected with Krishna. Does that make sense? So one has to be very careful, is that it's there, because others, then they get more and more realization of what Prabhupada's saying, how to properly follow it, how to develop. Because the point is just as Krishna is eternal, then the instruction, the spiritual master and his instructions are eternal. So one always has the spiritual, that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that he who reasons ill, who thinks that Vaishnavas die when thou art living in sound. Right? So there is no separation of time. You can say it's due to that, but it's a spiritual mission. It has nothing to do with that. Yes, if you're functioning on the material platform, yes, it will have that effect. But if you're not functioning on the spiritual platform, a material platform, why would it have that effect? You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. It's eternal. So when we start talking like, oh, well, you could do these things when Prabhupada was here, we're talking on the material platform 100%. If you say, yes, the modes adjust, and so there's hippies, and then there's all these different things, and now we got millennials, or whatever it is that, you know, is you know, setting all the flavor, then that's just the modes of nature, but the modes control. But to say is, no, it's different than before. Prabhupada did that, but you can't do that anymore. And we, being the people on the scene, we're up to date, so we know what to do. That's totally false ego, totally mundane. Right? Totally Kaliya Nag. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we have to be very, very careful of. We can't say that. Yes, we try to apply Prabhupada's teachings into particular circumstance. And as the circumstance adjusts, we make adjustments in the application. But that's in the detail, not in the principle. But what is being discussed is changing of the principle. Because the individuals who are discussing this way do not understand what the principle is. They don't even know the difference between principle and detail. Right? Let alone what we're dealing with. Does that make sense? So therefore it comes up. But as we see here, as soon as Krishna is involved, it's something that can be cleared. Right? And so clearing it's not the difficult part. It's having it cleared. That's the difficult part. Like, see, for Krishna, he's just dancing. But for Kali, it's a bit of a trip. So therefore, to clear this, then it's just straightforward. But the point is those who have a problem with this, then the difficulty is going to be the false ego. as we see, Kali, as soon as if he brings up another head, and then Krishna chastised that, then another head. So 101 heads, you know, prominent. That means so many varieties of deceit and cruelty. Right? Is that... So that's why we are practical and we function, but not at the expense of Krishna consciousness. Because that's the most valuable. Does that make sense?
So can we say that we draw the line where the principle is and the details may vary?
Yes, because the principle will always be the same. That's the whole point. That's why the association of devotees, you come together, then they understand the same principle. Mm-hmm. And its application. So if you're in an ideal situation, you know, it means the standard, like let's say like in Mayapur or something, then everyone can follow the same standard. But as we go into various situations, then it's not always ideal, then we adjust for the situation. As it adjusts, but as it changes back, then we change back. But if having adjust, we just stay there, then that means we're dealing with attachment. We're not understanding the principle. We're not dealing with purity or goodness. Right? Does that make sense? So then we should just stick to the recommendations given by the acharyas. Does that make sense? Because we can't change it because I like this other thing better. There's a standard. And we're functioning, you know, if we're not following that, we're functioning below standard. And so we shouldn't try to make below standard as standard. Means if you make below standard as standard, yes, there is a standard like that. And as you mentioned before, that's called antyaja, or outcasts. Like that. So one has to be careful in all this. So. This emboldens them to make a direct attack upon Krishna himself when he appears on the scene of their depraved activities in order to restore the living faith of his own bona fide associates. Right? So Krishna will always, those who are bona fide associates means those who are actually surrendered, then they will then take it up. Now the good part about it is devotional service being eternal, even if one does get distracted, that one will take it up. You know, at some point again, but why waste time? Why lose it? One should stay with, you know, that bona fide association and move forward so in one lifetime one can go back to Godhead. Because if we're attached to the modern scenario, we'll have to remain here to function within it. Because they don't have a modern scenario in the spiritual world. It just doesn't exist. You know what I'm saying? So where will you go? Because Brahman doesn't have it. It's eternal, so you can't say it's modern. Spiritual world's eternal, so there's no modern. You know? And they follow the Vedic culture, so, you know, the only place you'll be able to actually be is here. Because all the other planetary systems follow the Vedic standards. You know, so only here, in this particular time, this particular attachment, you follow. Because if you go back in time, then, you know, people had social positions that they followed. Now's the only time you don't. So you'll have to go to, you know, another universe where Kali Yuga in, you know, 2000, the 2000s is running, and then, you know, then take birth there, and then, hey, then you can, you know, enjoy the, how you say, enjoy the sweet rice. Is that?
Not the sweet rice, but vegan ice cream.
Yes, true. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. With what's that stuff, that funny plant stuff called for sweetener?
Oh, stevia.
Stevia.
Yeah. Yes.
We see sometimes in order to attract people, and it's not soft preaching or whatever, hard preaching, it's just too many embellishments. And sometimes people, they don't even understand that's Krishna consciousness, in a sense.
Oh, we make too many embellishments.
Yeah. And
what kind of embellishments and embellishments?
you talk about psychology.
Say, when you walk in the door, they all, how you say, take off their hat.
Maybe. I've never seen that one.
Now that's one thing. They could have a medieval theme, you know, program, and have everybody come, and then, you know, they'll have the Gregorian, you know, how you say, chants. Mahamantra chants, and, you know,
maybe
like that.
Christmas and something. And I'm saying that we talk about psychology, men, women, all that stuff, you know, energies, and
well, it depends who you're talking
stuff.
To.
But you continue talking like that, those people will never understand what Krishna consciousness is. And even if they consider themselves devotees, they get attached to that idea much more than to simple Krishna consciousness. Then what do you do?
Then point out, then you just take it further. What's all that for? That's understanding on the Brahman Paramatma levels, but Bhagavan means it's about pleasing Krishna. So then you move them forward to, all this is only useful in as much as it helps you not be materially attached and be, you know, happy with the idea of being attached to Krishna. So it's just you keep moving them forward. So because of that, they're not so materially absorbed, but then they're not so properly devotionally absorbed. You just have to keep them moving forward. So. Those who are not exceedingly clever can never be servants of Krishna. But the service of Krishna is also never available to those who are whose cunning is applied for depriving Krishna of the fullness of his enjoyment. Right? In other words, cleverness is part of, so clever is practical intelligence. Right? You have theoretical intelligence, but practical intelligence, that's cleverness. Right? So one has to be clever because you're seeing the situation, how to apply Krishna consciousness into the situation. That's cleverness. But if we use this cleverness then for one's own purpose rather than for Krishna's, then it takes on the flavor of cunning. Right? Because cunning is also an application of practical intelligence, but it's called cunning because it's for yourself. It's not for higher purposes.
And if it's mixed?
I'm just trying to say how you say that. Kunever or
what's
that? Clevooning or
Kunlever.
Huh? Kunlever. We're connecting clever and cunning. Okay. Okay, so you can't be for depriving Krishna of his fullness of his enjoyment. So it always has to be how to please Krishna. No?
Yes.
Okay. Kaliya and those who are actuated by a naturally malicious disposition are also styled clever in the ordinary phraseology of this damned world. Such rascals may also have the impudence of taking their stand upon the text of the scriptures and using their cunningness in the graceless attempt of depriving Krishna the service of his own. Right? So in other words, like Krishna says, better to do your own duty than someone else's nicely. Like that. But then, you know, so because Krishna likes it when one does one's own duty and that sincerity is there. You can say, no, but I can do this other better. But the point is then you think I'm doing it. While the one that you do yourself, that's your own, then you may not feel as comfortable at. But being that it's yours, then you have to surrender to Krishna to make it work. So that's going to be more pleasurable to Krishna. Right? And then if you can do yours nicely, but depend on Krishna, know it's for pleasing Krishna, then Krishna gets his enjoyment. But when we use the scriptures for cunningly gaining our own benefits, then we're cheating Krishna out of his natural part in this process. Because then it's not about Krishna. We're using religion for ourselves, rather than religion to please Krishna. Yes.
And if you want to better our own character for Krishna and for ourselves as well.
But for ourselves means if we better our characters to use in Krishna's service, we already have bettered ourselves. Because it means our better self is a more Krishna conscious self. Right? And so then that's what's meant by the Shastras, that if you do things in Krishna consciousness, it already covers the mundane aspect of it. The benefits are already covered. They're not separate. Does that make sense? So there's no need to try to do both at once. It's difficult. You're trying to do two things when you only need to do one. And you can only do one thing at a time anyway. So therefore, if I'm trying to cultivate a proper attitude in serving Krishna, and so in that service I see to the attitude is appropriate for the situation, that's already improving our character. So we don't have to separately endeavor. This kind of conduct may also pass undetected and may even be regarded as possessing the perfect skill of confidential service. But Krishna is sure to expose the real nature of the villain just at the moment when it has been successful in misleading his best loved ones. Right? So right when someone comes to the pinnacle of where they feel they're successful in doing what they do, right at that point then Krishna will reveal that it's not going so well. Right? Yeah. So Krishna, in other words, Krishna is very, I forget the quality, but it just means he's perfect in time, place, and circumstance. So he knows just when to do something. You know. So if it's not happening, it means the moment hasn't arrived yet. So that's why one is patient. You know, in colloquials, wait for it. But, you know, you're patient and then it happens.
And if it doesn't?
It will.
In this life?
Then it means the point is it will happen at the perfect time. It is indeed, because point is, if you go back to Godhead and you're fully absorbed in Krishna, what do you care what happens to people here that gave you trouble?
No.
Yes, yeah, so therefore then it doesn't matter.
Sometimes it's nice to observe.
but if you're on the transcendental platform, then you'll feel sad that they're so absorbed in material life and they're suffering so much because of that.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. It is indeed very difficult to understand the ways of Krishna. I guess that answers that one. Right? The next question. Krishna apparently permits almost every form of offense to be perpetrated with impunity against his own beloved ones. This has the effect of providing the opportunity to his own for proving their incomparable love for him, and by the means of this unique exhibition of their love to defeat in the most fruitful manner the machinations of his worst enemies.
In a more simple language.
So is it the words or is it the total concept?
Only.
The concept is especially important. Okay. So, in other words, so this, the effect of these individuals who are cunning like Kaliya, using religious processes and getting their own way, and actually being effective, and then people becoming very much, you know, dedicated followers or committed to whatever they're doing, then this all builds up to a point, because what will happen while this goes on, right? Because even though one may, let's say, using the contemporary context, use the words like being broad and equal and, you know, all these different things, are these individuals actually? No. So if one is committed to the standard processes of devotional service, they will actually be opposed to that. Mm-hmm. Right? So then that situation coming up, then it does a few things. One is that it provides the opportunity for those who are sincere in serving Krishna to express or show that affection for Krishna, that dedication to Krishna, no matter what the difficulties are. Right? And then it also gives the opportunity for Krishna then to correct the situation and interact with those devotees. Does that make sense? because these others have interacted with Krishna as Kaliya. Right? So therefore, you have to become Kaliya to be interacted with as Kaliya. So you want to be deceitful and cruel and cunning and all these things, and deal with Krishna in that form. Then Krishna will reciprocate in that form. You put your effort into that, Krishna will reciprocate. Just like you put your practice into most anything, and then you become good at that, whatever you practice. So if someone practices this mentality, then with time they'll be good at it. And being good at it, then it will make trouble for the others. That's the problem. That's why it's not recommended. Because even though it may be what you like to do, what you like to do gives trouble to everybody else. And so then when it comes to that point where it is giving trouble, then at that point, then Krishna, as he deals with, as you surrender, he reciprocates. So they deal as Kaliya, then he reciprocates by chastising. Does that make sense? But in the meantime, we see is that for the sincere devotees, then they may go through some trouble, but they surrender to Krishna, and that pleases Krishna. Because we're actually dealing on the eternal platform of the soul. Soul is technically unaffected. So it's just the affection that is being expressed. That is the real thing. The other things, especially in the material world, then it's not actually real. Is that something else? Yeah. It is indeed... okay. We just did that.
The friends of Krishna.
The friends of Krishna are offered to the malice of cunning and relentless brutes in order to bring out the difference between the two and thereby enable the latter to desist from troubling the devotees of their own accord. Right? So they have to come to the point where they give up harassing the devotees, because the whole idea is everyone's supposed to at some point go back to Godhead. So that means if one is bothering the devotees, that's the worst thing you could do in the material world. So that has to be corrected. Right? But if being corrected in connection, especially if it's within devotional service, then one becomes corrected and then continues on the devotional path. And then for the materialists, then, Maya has her own way of dealing with these things. But these brutes are never allowed to associate with the servants of Krishna, even after they forego all their malice towards them. They are eternally debarred from the service of Krishna in Braja. But the touch of Krishna's feet makes a real difference between the recipient of his mercy and the other brutes. Kali is no longer regarded by Garuda as the enemy of Krishna. Kali is therefore allowed a place amongst those who are protected by Krishna. So in other words, you don't want to risk having a place in the association of the sincere devotees by harassing other devotees, because Krishna won't allow that. One will have to be separated. But then by getting the grace of Garuda, then he'll be in the association of those protected by Krishna. And then if that positive devotional mood then comes up, then only one can take up that position. Does that make sense? So because if you harass, then the problem is Krishna will tend to separate you from the devotees. Like that. That's the position. It does not follow that it is a paying business to poison the hearts of his servants against Krishna, which is sure to be granted with the reward of his protection. Yes, this is so after the pride of the miscreant is thoroughly broken by being trod upon by Krishna himself. He is thereby inspired with the most wholesome dread, which effectively prevents him from trying to breed mischief amongst the bona fide devotees by owning an unwilling allegiance to Krishna and assuming the badge of his servitude by wearing on his head the print of his lotus feet. Right, so what will happen is, having been chastised in this way, then one will be very, very careful about disturbing the devotees. Right? And then he'll always carry that as how you say? Just what comes to mind. He'll always carry that as a, what is it? Front lock between thine eyes. then we'll always carry it on one's head in some way or another. Okay. So does that make sense? Just like we say, as we carry the order of Guru on our head, so they will carry this chastisement or instruction from Krishna not to bother the devotees, and they'll have that fear of performing such things, and so then they won't. Is that, you know? So that just naturally comes up. The mercy shown to Kali is so obviously and disproportionately great in its magnitude, in face of the extreme gravity of his offense, that no rationalistic explanation can do justice to its full beneficent significance. So even though one is so much disturbing, then still Krishna's blessing is still so great that you can't by logic understand how the two will connect. That's why in Manu it's obvious. You've done this, then this is the result. People will say it's balanced. But when you're dealing with Krishna, then the result's not balanced. It's always in favor of devotional service. Right? But as long as that pride is there, the chastisement goes on. Does that make sense? Because as one is proud, oh yes, no, I can get Krishna's mercy this way, but the problem is as long as one has that pride, then Krishna will chastise. So Krishna's mercy cannot be as inconceivable, it's so great. The mercy of the Vaishnavas, the mercy of Krishna, it's not actually conceivable. Sri Sukadev Goswami continues. My dear King Parikit, Lord Krishna's wonderful, powerful dancing trampled and broke all of Krishna's 1,000 hoods. Right, so he has 1,000 hoods, of which 101 are prominent. Because you see, sometimes it mentions 1,000, sometimes it says 101. But he had 1,000 heads. But the prominent ones, the bigger heads, I guess, the ones that he would stick up, then were 101. Then the serpent, profusely vomiting blood from his mouth, finally recognized Krishna to be the eternal personality of Godhead, the supreme master of all moving and non-moving beings, Sri Narayana. Thus, within his mind, Kaliya took shelter of the Lord. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, though the seed of bhakti in the form of mercy had previously been planted in Kaliya's heart by his wives who were exalted devotees, it could not sprout because of his cruel conduct arising from aparad, as seeds sown on barren ground cannot sprout. Right? So his wives, are as devotees, they had tried to benefit, but they couldn't sprout like that. So then he does his duties as a husband, they do theirs as wives. On that platform it goes on, because that's the only thing that's working. But as devotees, then they didn't have any connection there. Does that make sense? So we see is that if we say, many times you have the situation where the wife is a devotee, the husband's not, the relationships can still go on nicely. Right? It's not as, you know, comfortable, but it goes on, as we see with Kali and his wives. And they're still, you know, work doing their duties. But why are they doing their duties? Because it's pleasing to Krishna. Right? While the husband may be doing his duties simply because it pleases himself. Right? So then you don't have that devotional element. But as long as the duties are there, it works. Right? Does that make sense? One may say, no, but it has to have this and that. It's just like driving your car. Does your car have that perfectly devotional attitude? No, you just have to deal with it properly as a car. It responds properly as a car. Therefore, husband and wife, dealing with each other, they perfectly deal as husband and wife. They'll respond that way. That's why you're married. You want to be a pure devotee, it's generally, you know, Babaji is recommended. Why you'd get married. You know? We don't see that Priyavrata thought, you know, yeah, I really want to dedicate myself to just being fully Krishna conscious, so therefore I should get married. Right? That was not his way of thinking. Does that make sense? So, marriage is about the material need. So perform the duties on the material need, it works. The devotional, then you cultivate that yourself. And if that can be done also in the company of one's spouse, then that just makes it even better. You understand? They're two different things that are connected, but at the same time, not actually dependent on each other. Does that make sense? But if you're a good devotee, it's easier to be a good family member. Right? Because devotional service naturally invokes piety. And the other you can be, but it just takes more work. Yes? No, but the point is if, but if she doesn't do, then how is she benefiting?
So she can still please Krishna by her devotee service, even though she may use it against Krishna.
That's there. Then you can advise if they'll take. But the point is unless one can correct it, then what can one do? Because then the whole family unit falls apart. You know what I'm saying? And so then if one says, well, better it does fall apart, then what would be the natural position?
Babaji.
Yes, that's the whole point. Then one becomes a recluse. And just sits down, chants Hare Krishna, and that's it. You know, you gave it your best shot, didn't work, so you understand? So therefore, if we're trying to situate ourselves at what's good for devotional service, then from that consideration we can look. But the point is the duties themselves can go on. In other words, the household life will go on if you do your duties nicely. It may not be a Krishna conscious environment, but the household life will go on.
Not an offense, even though the husband may be very offensive or something, but it's not offense. She will not do any offense like that, serving him.
No, because she avoids those things, and if he talks all this, you just tell her, you know, she just figures out some clever way to get him to not talk like that in front of her. You know, when he goes out and he's with his friends, he can talk whatever nonsense he wants, but when he's at home, then, you know, keep it about house stuff. You know, you'll leave the office, talk at the office. You know what I'm saying? And that way then she can do her duties nicely for Krishna. Otherwise, then if she tries to adjust it, then he'll may stop her from doing those kind of things. You know what I'm saying? You know, and if it just doesn't work, then that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? The natures aren't compatible, and that's why in the Vedic situation they're working very hard to see that the natures are compatible, because there is some point it can work out. You understand? Now, when Kaliya does work it out, then the household life goes on fine. Right? You understand? So that's the whole point, is that one has to see those elements. It's not ideal, but being in the material world is never ideal.
Because he was serving so nicely, then he could go to war, and he went to war with Maharaj Pradhan
again, but
then he got Jagannath.
Yes. Because they're just doing their duty. Now, you can give up that duty, but then it's not that you necessarily get involved in something else. Does that make sense? The one is careful about that. That means if we're looking at it from that pure ideal, that's how it would work. But the point is we're not necessarily in the ideal situation, so we do what is best for our Krishna consciousness. So if one situation is not working, we find a situation that is worthwhile. You know what I'm saying? So you have to be, one has to be careful, because the point is if one does the duties nicely, then that works out very nicely. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, does anybody have bad feelings about Al Capone's mom?
Gangster.
No.
But she's just doing her duties as a mom. You know? He just happened to pick a not necessarily highly recommended occupation. Though it pays well. And he's a nice son. So their relationship goes on nicely. The weakness is in the occupation. So therefore, the household relationship is going nicely, at the Krishna conscious part of the husband is not. Right? Now, if the household doesn't go nicely and the Krishna conscious, then what do you have? You got nothing. So at least if you have the one, there's something to build on. Because at some point, if there has a doubt comes up or something like this, then they might start to see what's the appropriate. And then you adjust. Otherwise, if this modern thing is, you know, it's all like, you know, someone does something, you do something back, and then they do something and back and forth like that, then by the time you do work things out, then there's so much, you know, all these different things have happened that then one can't actually function together. Does that make sense? So that's why you do things in the proper way. You don't try to do something in an improper way. Does that make sense? You know, because otherwise it's the standard stuff. It always makes trouble. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's like, you know, the machine's not working, then you take the wrench and adjust it. You don't whack it with the wrench, you know, unless the wrench is big enough and the machine is Russian. Then, of course, you have to whack it because that's how it was built. You know, because by whacking it, things, it vibrates and that adjusts all the things themselves. You understand? So it's just the way it's made. But when his offense vanished through the punishment by the touch of Krishna's lotus feet, suddenly the seed began to sprout. He thought that Krishna's power was thousands of times greater than that of his enemy, Garuda. Right? And Garuda is a problem. That's why he left where he was, so that he can understand the master of Garudas even more. Right? Therefore, this person must be the Supreme Lord, approachable by bhakti. Right? Like Garuda, not so much approach for Kaliya, but the Lord you can approach through bhakti. Okay, therefore this person must be the Supreme Lord, approachable by bhakti, mentioned by his wives. Quote, making me realize that I am a fool to think that I am God by displaying this extraordinary strength. He has accepted the position of my guru and placed his feet on my head. I take shelter of him. Right, so Krishna, by showing his extraordinary strength, then shows Kaliya that his thinking that he's God and powerful is foolish. And then from that, by the instructions given by his wives, then he can approach the Lord through bhakti. Therefore he surrendered to bhakti. Right? So he can say, well, how did he get this blessing? It's because of the associations of his wives who were devotees. And by that, then he got the Lord's mercy. So we see again, it's always by association. Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, thus by the word virugna, it is hinted that the excess of powerful dancing was for the purpose of increasing the good fortune of mercy in the guise of the above described trampling. In this way, by all of his hoods becoming broken and so forth, Kali is becoming humbled due to the dispelling of his intoxication, etc. From the factual viewpoint, by the diminishing of his original inner contamination, and by awakening of his pure consciousness, he remembered the transcendental personality of Godhead, following which he surrendered, as described by the words beginning smritva. Right, so it's not that the contamination is from the poison, no, it's coming from his envy of Krishna, from the primordial sense. And then that's just brought him to this point now where it happens to be manifest as he's a snake that's poisonous. Right? Krishna is the spiritual master of all moving and non-moving beings, their father, because he is the primeval person, the original of all. So then seeing this by proper association, now then he becomes benefited. Right? But as we see, it's because he gets further benefit from his wives by their prayers, and because he can only see this, but he can't actually function at this point, so his wives step in. And then after that, because he's given trouble to the Brajavasis, then he'll have to leave. Right? And then at some point, then he can come back. It's just, the Nagapatnis pray for mercy, like we see is that in Fiji, then they established, Kaliya Krishna there. So now there he's being worshipped in the association of Krishna. So, you know, it took 5,000 years, and then now he's getting that nice benefit. Okay, verses 31 253, the Nagapatnis pray for mercy. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, when Kali's wife saw how the serpent had become so fatigued from the excessive weight of Lord Krishna, who carries the entire universe in his abdomen, and how Kali's umbrella-like hoods had been shattered by the striking of Krishna's heels, they felt great distress, with their clothing, ornaments, and hair scattered in disarray. They then approached the eternal personality of Godhead. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, the wives approached Krishna, seeing how Kali was burdened with Krishna, who, having the universe in his belly, had become most heavy. The wives until now had been indifferent towards their cruel husband, but now they were in sorrow. Artaha previously thought, let him die, and then as widows we can fully surrender to the Lord. Okay, so if you wondered what was the way to think about it, here they're giving the example. But when they saw the symptoms of Sanchari Bhava, such as humility, regret, doubt, and indifference to his suffering condition manifest in his body, because before he's suffering, he's fighting back with false ego, right, and pride. They thought he has become a Vaishnava. This is good fortune for us. We shall try to save him. So at that point, then they try to save him. Okay. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Puts everything in proper perspective. With this in mind, they came together with affection in their hearts and with sorrow for his condition approached Krishna. Yes, so that's what you see, is the Vedic always balances everything. Some of these that know you have to do your duty, and then like this, but in that duty, then it's not that they're indifferent. They're performing their duties perfectly, but they're indifferent. Right? Like that. So they're spiritually situated. And then when it comes to devotee, then we care for devotees. Now they try to take. Now that, then the mood changes. The activities are the same, but the mood changes. So, okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaurav Vrindavan. Thank you.